Ann. Hi, it's Katie and Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
We are great. We're so excited to talk to you. I have to give you a little background now. I was with you on an evening, and Ann, I can't even remember what year it was. It was Music Midtown in Atlanta many years ago, and Alex Cooley had decided at the Civic Center to do a round table, and you and Indigo Girls and Sean Colvin and Darius Rucker, we were all sitting in a circle, and I was the interviewer. I'm sure you remember it.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, it was kind of about songwriting, right?
Yes, and that there was a huge audience full of people. And the funny thing is, I've been doing radio in Atlanta for, 30-something years now, and I know Indigo Girls very well. You couldn't have had a bigger star for them than you that was performing that night. And to see them, who everybody just loves and adores, look at you with the adoration that they did. And then to have you get up and sing your song stripped down by yourself in front of that mic, the audience loved it. I loved it. We all loved it. And now you're going to do this something very similar in Buckhead next week.
Yeah, well, I'd forgotten about that. That's really great.
It was such a unique experience, you know, to hear you guys talk and to talk amongst yourselves. I just sort of would pop off the conversation to get you started. You know, Melissa and I have been talking. Melissa writes for the AJC, and she and I do a bit every week on the radio together, and we share information. We talk about women in music and how we grew up loving rock and roll, and you are the woman for us. I mean, it's like we just adore you and love you, and I'm so excited about this show. Tell us a little bit about how the tour's been going. Tell us about how you're picking the songs you're singing.
Well, thank you. The tour has been way beyond my expectations. You know, I thought that I'd go out and I'd do my solo tour and that people would accept it and they'd like it and have fun. But what's happening is there's an evolution going on, and we're getting pretty wild crowd reactions on the positive side, and we're getting these amazing reviews, and it's just they're really loving to see something fresh. And I'm having such a great time. I know that they can feel how into it I am. How I'm choosing the songs is I chose 3 or 4 heart songs and then completely redesigned them. I chose a few songs that I've written over the last year and a half or so, and then I chose a bunch of covers that have really inspired me all through the years, but that seem particularly relevant now. And I just got a big wish list going and then started working them out. And the ones that really lit up. Then I arranged all these different kinds of songs into a set that flows. And it's really working. We're just having a blast.
Well, Ann, this is Melissa. Hi. I see that you've been opening with the Who song, The Real Me. So it sounds like you definitely want to send a message right from the start.
Yeah.
You do several Who songs.
At this point in my life, something about the Who's kind of punk sensibility really speaks to me, especially the song Love Rain on Me is one of the more holy songs that they've written.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, holy in a sacred sense, not in a Jesus sense, but in a truly sacred way. Also, Won't Get Fooled Again could have been written yesterday. I mean, literally yesterday. It's so relevant to what's going on now. And, of course, The Real Me, that's one of the more dramatic human honesty songs I think I've ever heard. So all these together just kind of serve throughout the set to bring spark and fire into the set. I can really relate to it.
Do you know any of the guys from The Who, or have you ever spent any time around those guys?
I spent a lot of time around John Entwistle, who's no longer with us, of course, but he's the one that I knew the best. I've met Daltrey. I think I shook Pete's hand one time, but he seemed pretty distracted. So I can't say that I knew Pete.
Well, tell us about John, because I've had a chance to interview him a few times. He was a very interesting guy.
Very interesting guy. I was doing a project with him called A Walk Down Abbey Road. It was a bunch of artists, Todd Rundgren, John, me, a few other people, and it was half the show were our own songs played by the assembled band, and then the other half were Beatles songs. And so we had John Entwistle playing bass on Barracuda and on Can You See the Real Me and on Beatles songs. And so it was very interesting. I had the pleasure of sitting next to him on a flight from Boston to Maui.
And that was a long flight.
Yeah. And that was when I was still drinking, and we had drinks together, and we just talked and slept next to each other on the airplane seats, you know, and we partied together a few times and went to Japan. So, yeah, I saw what it was like to be on the road with John Entwistle.
Wow.
Very, very cool person. I mean, true rocker. True rock and roller in the old school sense. Love girls.
I was actually just going to ask you about some of the three Heart songs that you're doing in concert, and you mentioned that you've kind of rearranged them. And what about those three songs did you want to bring to the stage in sort of your own version?
I just think the songs that I chose from the Heart days are just good songs, and I'm attached to singing them. I'm attached to singing Alone and What About Love and Crazy on You and A Million Miles. It brings a little bit of, you know, old-fashioned me as a songwriter to the set. And it complements the new song. They complement the new song that I've written. I just like singing them. And I like hearing them stripped down with the pearls extracted, you know? Mm-hmm. Bring out the pearl.
The song Alone, I don't know if you remember this or even know it, but I remember watching American Idol years ago. Did you see when Carrie Underwood did that song?
I think I remember that. She did a good version.
She did. And the funny thing was, and I think that's what won her the thing.
I think that after that, she started to have a career. And one of the things that I thought at the time was, good, there's somebody who's just going to sing it straight. You know, she didn't do a big bunch of vocal pyrotechnics and stuff, which I always think is sort of missing the point, you know.
Are you enjoying being on stage with the guys in the band? I know a lot of them you've worked with over the years in various incarnations, whether it was Hard or your other projects and that kind of stuff. So are you pretty comfortable with them?
Oh, yeah, they're great. I was hanging out with the keyboard player Daniel Walker yesterday, and he's just such a humble, sweet soul and doesn't have any idea how good he is, I don't think. Or if he does, he never shows it. He's just a dramatically good musician, and he's able to jam and just come out of the box. If I say to him, just play what you want to play on the beginning of Love Rain on Me, just go ahead and take a little soliloquy here and then come into the song and I'll be there. He comes out every night with something different and beautiful and exploratory and just fantastic. So all of them, in his own way, each one is on a musical level that I'm really inspired by every night.
Hmm. Well, and you have to trust them, I would think, too, mm-hmm. big time. Who are the rest of the members of the band that we can watch for Tuesday?
On drums, I have Denny Fonheiser. He actually played with Heart during the Road Home days and went on tour with us for a couple of years back in the 90s. And then Craig Bartok, who was with Heart for many years up until last year. And on bass, Andy Stoller, who is from Seattle, like Daniel. I don't have a big element of the New York, you know, L.A. sideman thing. I have guys who haven't been in star bands. They're guys who are being given a shot here to do something really different and be pure. It's working great.
Oh, love cool. hearing that. I have a question that is a little off track, but because I know, and I want to get to Chris Cornell in a second, but, you know, Atlanta, I've grown up here, and Greg Allman is just part and parcel of what I've grown up with, and his funeral's this weekend, and we've been very close to him over the years musically. We were wondering if you had any dealings with Greg or any memories of being around the Allman Brothers band.
Well, you know, I never met them. I never crossed paths with them. I understand that they're a really beloved entity to a lot of people, and they definitely influenced a whole lot of people.
Yes.
But, you know, as with Chris, I think that it's really important to not be loss-based, but to be grateful for what he was able to bring in the time he was able to be here. Mm. That's really going to be his legacy. I doubt whether he or Chris would want to think that we're all down here going like, oh, fuck, boo, they're gone now. Oh, my God. I don't think that's the point, you know. I think that their personal worth and that their sense of value comes from what they did do. Now let them go. They're probably both relocated already.
I hope so, yes. Hope they're just totally chill right now, I hope.
Right.
And I know you understand because being a singer, you know, you are the voice of the band. That sounds so silly. But both those guys were, I think Chris Cornell had one of the most amazing voices. I've always loved him. And I happened to just catch you that night on Kimmel doing Black Hole Sun. I couldn't believe I tuned in. I knew I was going to be talking to you today. And I was so happy to see you. You look beautiful. And you did Thanks. Such a great tribute to him. Tell us about your relationship with Chris.
Well, over the years, end of the 80s and all through the 90s and up to the present day, we were friends. And I will not say that I was his best friend or anything, but I definitely got to hang out with him a lot and jam and sing. And he was always, from the time I first met him when he was very young, he was extremely complicated and deeply sensitive, a real sensitive, and just somebody who really had his nerves on the outside. And the whole fame game and the lack of authenticity and the whole fakery and image consciousness, the whole poser thing about being famous in Hollywood,
yeah,
was really abhorrent to him. Mm-hmm. And in that way, he was a very pure soul. And it just, I saw that it confused him a lot. And he wanted it because he wanted the beauty of the singing experience and the lyrics and being up in front of people and connecting with them. But the byproducts of all that were really a heavy load for him. He was a great, pure soul, beautiful soul.
Oh, I'm so glad he had you to lean on. I mean, I imagine that those times that you guys were together, and I know that you shared a lot with the guys back then from Seattle, that had to be something very precious for all of you to share.
Yeah, I think the thing about that is that particular community of musicians up in Seattle at that time, nobody was really from L.A. or New York.
I mean,
so we hadn't been born and raised into the idea of the company town. We weren't hardened to the idea of what it takes of just whatever it takes, I'll do just to get fame, you know. That didn't exist. It was pretty much just a bunch of, you know, amateur punks, and they just wanted to get rid of all the fake and phonery and bullshit, but they didn't know how to live inside the fame.
The fame.
Yeah.
And how did you contend with that? Because Hart, especially, you know, when you guys exploded in the MTV era, and there was a lot of, I guess you could say, fakery that went along with the videos and the hair and all of that. And being such a pure rocker at heart, was that ever a complicated place for you to be?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. It's one thing to go to a video shoot and spend a day and a half or 2 days just getting all costumed up and made up and hair and everything for a video, but then when you have to go and take that live, mm-hmm. just live in that kind of costume, it got very uncomfortable. I mean, it was just really nothing like who we really were. So, yeah, it got pretty uncomfortable. There were expectations, especially back then, even worse expectations on women than there are now. Because it was the first moment where women were being seen inside of rock on the MTV theater. So there was no wiggle room at all. You know?
I think you're talking about these guys in Seattle, and you think that you're a decade ahead of them anyway. And then you were on the forefront of women in rock. I mean, really and truly, you see stuff now. How do you compare it nowadays? It's got to be frustrating for you to see. When you did that show at Music Midtown, your daughter was with you. I can still picture her. She was a little pip. She was probably 5 or 6 years old. And
right.
I'm wondering how all this comes with raising a daughter and what you see nowadays that's so different.
Yeah, I remember that now. I remember Sean and I were hanging out with my daughter. And
yep.
It was a moment when my daughter Marie was first learning how to read, and she had latched onto Gone with the Wind, and she kept reading the first page of Gone with the Wind to us on that set. And John and I were kind of shaking our heads and going, whoa.
She's gonna be an actress.
a new generation of Scarlett O'Hara. You know? But and then Sean had a little baby not long after that, I think.
Yeah. Who,
raising a daughter inside of that was tricky for sure because, you know, my daughter, little tiny girl, would see me out there in these big get-ups and big kabuki makeup and all that huge hair, and then I'd come off stage and I'd take it all off, and I'd be her mama. She used to like my big makeup face, and then I would take it off, and it would go away. and I'd just be the one that, you know, was there in the kitchen saying, okay, now it's time for you to eat.
Oh, what does she do?
She is 26 now. She's married. She has kids. She's doing fine.
That's great.
I mean, she's not living any kind of glamorous life or anything. She's living a life with little kids as a mom up in North Seattle, and she's learning how to deal with reality where you're in charge and you don't have endless money. You don't have things just taken care of for you by a mom and a nanny, you know.
The reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you want to look to the future and what's ahead for you, and that you've been dealing with some family strife. So what does the future mean for Hart and, you know, and for you and Nancy as solo artists?
Well, the family strife thing is long past now. It kind of resonated much longer in the press than it needed to. That's all taken care of, and it's just Nancy and I are really sort of on artistic walkabout now, each of us doing our own solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any plans beyond this year right now. We both just want to see what happens, and if and when we get back together, it won't be the same old Hart thing. It won't just be us going around the country on these classic rock package tours banging out the hits. It'll be something fresh. So right now we're trying to figure out what that is and live in the moment.
Bingo.
Yeah,
I love
sure.
that. We are big fans of yours. Thank you so much for all this time. And we're going to be there Tuesday night, so we look forward to seeing you, Anne. But thank you. You're always so giving when we talk to you. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the cool talk.